Radio.
Arguments are not going to attract people. Winning is going to attract people.
Radio.
The Poor People's Riot, as they call it, was necessary, it was reasonable, and it was just.
Radio.
And if you get in my way to make sure that that man gets housing, or that he gets enough to eat, I will move you.
Radio.
Okay.
Thanks for tuning in. This is your Word of Mouth Muse. We're now on the second segment of tonight's show, and that is OCAP Radio. And I'll be your guest host for tonight. My name is Susie Alvarez, and here in the studio, I have John Clark from the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty joining us to help out with this segment of tonight's show. Thank you, John, for coming.
Thanks very much.
So, I think that what we wanted to do today on this edition of OCAP Radio was to give some historical context to the anti-poverty movement in this province and in Canada. And from what I hear from Mark, you have a lot of information and a lot of facts to share with us.
Hopefully a bit.
So I wonder in which ways there are similarities and dissimilarities between the current economic crisis and the depression of the 1930s and the ways in which people then fought back as opposed to how we need to fight back now as poor and working class people?
Well, the situation in the 1930s, of course, was a sudden and dramatic catastrophe. There was massive unemployment, and at the time there was almost no what today would be referred to as social safety net. There were no real social programs in place. There certainly wasn't unemployment insurance, and for the most part there weren't welfare programs. There were forms of charity and parish relief type operations around. So people facing unemployment faced immediately destitution and homelessness and malnutrition. And that sparked a movement of considerable resistance. Canada was one of the countries in which this occurred. It occurred as well in the United States, certainly in all the major industrialized mm-hmm. countries. There were large scale unemployed movements. They were generally very radical in their orientation. The Communist Party probably played the largest role in terms of providing organizers and direction for the movement. But there were other left-wing political tendencies as well that got organised, and left-wing elements within the CCF, the forerunner of the NDP, were also very, very active, and they organised very practically. There wasn't sort of offices in places as we have today, and people called in from all over the city. They took organization into the local level, so they formed block and neighborhood committees and associations, and the practical work they did immediately was to defend people. If people were facing eviction, through their block committees they could organize enormous crowds in almost no time at all to block evictions. The East York Workers Association in the 1930s had a system set up where they had wagons. And if the bailiffs were coming into a neighbourhood to take away the furniture of a family for non-payment of debt, they would go with their wagon and empty the house of all furniture, wait for the bailiffs to leave, and then bring the furniture back in again. And that kind of stuff was organised enormously. But there were also generalised campaigns. There were hunger marches. The famous Onto Ottawa trek took place in 1935. So there was an incredible large-scale movement of resistance. Today, there's also organizing, but it hasn't yet reached the same level and the same kind of scale that took place in the 1930s. There's been some important struggles. A lot of what we've done has tried to incorporate some of the lessons of that period, not to replicate things exactly because we operate in a different context, but that's how we've tried to, in OCAP, we put a lot of premium on actually defending people in their individual situations. If people are cut off of welfare, if they're facing eviction, these kinds of questions, we've done a lot of that kind of organising. And then, of course, we've had the generalised campaigns where we campaign against welfare cuts, where we struggled for the special diet for people on social assistance, those kinds of things. And I think, finally, that the real point that needs to be driven home at the moment is that we are facing a changed situation. We're no longer I mean, for perhaps 30 years, we've been dealing with an agenda of neoliberalism that has cut into the social programs. But now that's been intensified dramatically. It's not a coincidence that at the last summit of the G20 here in Toronto, plans were made for massive austerity on a worldwide scale, and we're seeing that starting to be implemented here. So the impetus for organizing and struggling and resisting, I think, is going to intensify, perhaps to levels not seen since the 1930s in the months and years ahead.
And I guess also the level of repression that comes from the establishment towards any movement of resistance to this economic austerity will also be intensified. And it's being intensified.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, first of all, to go back to the 1930s, it was a period of the most incredible repression. The chief of police in this city, Draper, was notorious in terms of his sort of anti-red repression. He established, he brought in a group of essentially gangsters from Chicago who formed a special squad within the Toronto police whose job was to smash political opposition. He passed edicts that no public meeting could be held in the city of Toronto that was not in the English language, so that all the Finnish workers, the Italian workers, the Yiddish speaking workers, all of those who tried to organize in their own languages had to do so illegally, as far as Draper was concerned. And the crackdowns on people's assemblies in the 1930s, we've done a lot of our marches out of Allen Gardens. In the 1930s, Allen Gardens was a battleground because the police would not allow people to rally and speak in Allen Gardens, and people had to spend months and months struggling and fighting for the right to speak. Now, an obvious parallel is the recent G20, where we're just weeks away. Just behind us, weeks ago, is the largest single act of mass political arrest that's ever occurred in the history of this country, surpassing even the War Measures Act, surpassing anything that's occurred in the past. And even in OCAP, on a smaller scale, we're starting to see some of those effects. Just last week, we organised an occupation of the Liberal Party headquarters, which is a fairly, as an act of civil disobedience, candidly, it's a fairly entry level kind of a thing to do. We did it precisely because we wanted to be able to do an action that we could incorporate people who were relatively new to community mobilizing and have it as a gathering that people would not find particularly disturbing. And the reaction of the police was something that we'd never seen before. I mean, I myself have been involved in occupations for perhaps 25 years. And when it occurs, what has always happened that I've ever seen in the past is the police come in and say, the owners want you to leave. Are you going to leave? Do you want to talk about it? You know, you have some time. And finally they'll say, well, if you don't leave, we're going to have to. But in this particular occasion, out came the handcuffs. They came right in. They charge us not with mischief. They charge us not with trespass, but with mischief, and then add forcible entry, an absolutely unimaginable charge. And then we're held overnight. We have to provide sureties. Bail conditions are imposed. I mean, this was a dramatic intensification of police tactics with regards to political protest, and it was fully backed up by the Crown Attorney's Office that sought even more stringent bail conditions than those that they were able to obtain. So that does not bode well. If we're going to have austerity, we're going to have repression as a backdrop and as a tool of that austerity, and I think that's very clear.
And it goes hand in hand, I guess. Now the key in terms of organizing is to get people still to come out and to organize and not be intimidated by this high, intensified level of repression.
Yes.
And can you speak about the challenges of organizing now in this new phase that we're entering in terms of...
Well, actually, I mean, repression is always a double-edged sword, right? I mean, the striking thing about the recent G20 mobilization was how unsuccessful the absolutely unprecedented denial of civil liberties and de facto warm up for a police state that we saw in this city. It didn't work. Mm-hmm. People continued to mobilize. They arrested 1,000 people, and still people were coming out in their thousands. And by the Monday after the whole weekend had transpired, there was a demonstration of thousands of people at police headquarters, where it was the police who had backed off. It was the police who had decided that this was not a viable option to simply lock everybody up. And people were still strong and defiant. And there are hundreds and hundreds of people who've been seriously radicalized and motivated by the experience. And similarly, going out on the streets after our little incident, I'm struck by how many people come up, and not, you know, sort of activists who have a sort of a background of this kind of thing, but just poor people on the streets, homeless people, just people in coffee shops, whatever. People just coming up and saying, that was wonderful, it's so great, it's that people are organizing, it's so important that people are speaking out. So, I mean, repression can have a chilling effect, but repression can get people angry as well.
Which is great, yeah. I think, and it's important. I always think about how the media, the mainstream media, likes to demonize, you know, and misinform the general public. And obviously, this serves the government and the police so well. And I think to that, I would like to, you know, CKLN and word of mouth being a grassrooted channel of information, I think it's important, and I think it's our duty to, like, turn that around and to make people understand that OCAP, the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, is an organization that is actually doing work and has been doing work that the government, the people we pay taxes to, should have been doing for a long time, protecting those of us who are, you know, civilians and people who live in this province and in this country. So can you speak about the history of OCAP, how OCAP came to be?
Yeah, I mean, we've actually been around for nearly 20 years now. In November, we're going to celebrate the anniversary.
That's great.
And we got started simply because at that particular time, there was a Liberal government in power in Ontario that had commissioned a study of the welfare system, which had then proposed some fairly substantial measures to improve people's situations. Nothing revolutionary or earth-shaking, but some significant measures. And the government was dragging its feet on any implementation of anything. And so a march was organized by people in various communities, people from unions, people from anti-poverty organizations. The NDP caucus at Queen's Park played a very, very good and important role at that time in it. There was a lot of organizations that participated. We organized a big march where people came from Windsor, Sudbury and Ottawa over a two-week period and marched down the highways to Queen's Park. And then we held a very large rally at Queen's Park. And out of that, a decision was made that we needed a long-term organization of the poor, and that led to the formation of OCAP. Initially, we had expected to see much more resources put in. That didn't happen at the time. And so OCAP was forced to play largely the role of a Toronto-based anti-poverty organization. But over time, we've established more and more links with people in other cities. And while there isn't really a provincial coalition at this point, there's certainly the possibility of building one that begins to emerge. And in the fight around the special diet for people on social assistance, we've been struck by how many people from how many cities now are talking about getting organized. So it's quite an exciting time in that regard.
And I think that it's something that it's good to talk about, the future of the work and how to build these coalitions. Like, right. what is the aim of OCAP and other organizations in terms of, like, building networks so right. that this right. work can be progressed? Or
yeah, I mean, I think what's posed now, as we start to see this wave of austerity measures coming down and being imposed on people, is an incredible process of politicizing and radicalizing people who have never really been active before. And I think the people who have not been politically active are going to be the most radical. And that's the sort of the challenge, is to build an organization that is not within present existing circles, but to actually take that organizing into communities that haven't yet developed a history of mobilizing. And over the last period, around since 2005, really, around the fight on the special diet, we've we've started to see more and more possibilities. Just recently, reflecting the real gains that have been made in terms of organising in Toronto, Somali community, for example, an organiser, Amina Ali from Etobicoke, actually came in and started to function as an OCAP organiser, which is a really exciting and important development. So I think that what we're going to have to work to is just that kind of really building a grassroots union of the poor that reaches communities throughout this city and then makes links with other places and builds a truly province-wide sort of base in communities.
In terms of building networks internationally, how do you see that happening? I mean, economic austerity, we're seeing that here impacting the province and the country right now, but in other places in the world has been going on for quite a few years, and it's being intensified even more. Like, you know, thinking of the example of Greece and Romania and other places in Latin America. So how about those international networks and connections?
I mean, I think it extremely important that we develop those, and to some degree we have already developed them. It's very important that we know about the struggles of other people. It's very important that we back up those struggles in various ways, practical ways. If an organization in a given community or a given country faces attack, then is there something we can do to target a corporate interest from that country or such like? A few years ago, an appeal was sent out by striking workers in Sri Lanka around the Bata Shoe Company, where they had organised an occupation of their factory and they'd been brutally attacked by the police and driven out. So we organised a solidarity action at the Bata Shoe Museum, which they were so pleased in Sri Lanka. The company started to renegotiate immediately afterwards. They were really thrilled. And to take the example the other way, 10 years ago, when we had a major confrontation with the authorities at Queen's Park in what they termed the Queen's Park riot, there were solidarity demonstrations organised in defence of OCAP members charged in a whole number of places. And I remember the Migrants Union in Korea actually organising a march on the Canadian consulate in Seoul, Korea, in solidarity with us. So those kinds of things are enormously important. During the G20, I hope people all around the world were saying, you know, people in Toronto are fighting too. One of our members who's done a lot of Palestine solidarity work got a call from somebody who'd seen her interviewed while sitting in a cafe in Ramallah in Palestine. So those kinds of things are incredibly important, but at the same time, we always, I think, need to remember that the greatest single contribution we can make to the international struggle is to strike a blow here and win the fight here.
Exactly.
And that's our prime task.
That's great. We're going to go to a musical break, and we're going to come back with more. Thanks, John, for joining us, and keep it locked on 88.1 FM. That's good.
dragones y los demás, los enemigos y la anarquía, porque yo quiero.
And thank you for tuning in. This is your Word of Mouth Muse. You're tuning into OCAP Radio. My name is Susie Alvarez, and I'm guest hosting tonight's show. And here in the studio, we have John Clark from the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. And we've been speaking about economic austerity, mobilizing and organizing in the face of this economic austerity. John, OCAP has been in communication with a number of cities and towns around the cuts to the special diet, notably coming together in May when people across the province vented their anger at their local Liberal MPP offices. Is there a way in which a cross-provincial movement can be further built to confront the continued economic crisis as it plays out?
I think it can, and I think it's really essential that that happen. People need to be organized everywhere. That's certainly true. But it's also true in terms of confronting a provincial government, that that you can have demonstrations at the provincial center, and that's very important. But at the same time, the local MPPs need to know that people in their own communities are active. So the thing that you talked about in May, it was only a first step. We certainly didn't cover the entire province and cover all the major centres and certainly most of the smaller ones, but we did have a significant level of mobilisation in quite a few centres, and people that were entirely new, that had never been involved before, came to us. I remember going up to North Bay, and there was a young woman who was facing the cut to the special diet, who organised this rally. And it was an incredible thing, because she MCs the rally, she does the media, she gets everything together and organizes it, and and she's organizing this rally, but it's also the first rally she's ever attended in her life, and it was a really hopeful feeling to that. And then people in a whole series of different communities started to get organised, and we're looking to take that forward. We're having discussions actually now with people inside the Canadian Union of Public Employees about working to try to establish raise the rates committees in different centres throughout the province of Ontario, and trying to take forward and get some resources into actually getting people organised on these issues. We want to defend the special diet, but the real question we all agree is to actually raise social assistance rates. They've lost 55% of their spending power since Mike Harris came to power. Dalton McGuinty hasn't closed the gap. He's allowed the gap to get worse, actually. People are poorer today than they were when Harris was around. And so that kind of thing is absolutely essential. And, I mean, it really, we have to have the perspective, I think, of not just how many cities do we nominally have some committee in place that has an office somewhere, but in what communities, geographically and in terms of immigrant communities, etc., in what places do we actually have a base of people that are organizing? That's really the key question. It's not enough to have some storefront with a sign up in community X. It's the question of what roots you put down in that community and to what degree you've taken the idea of resisting actually into people's lives and made a difference.
I was recently on your website, on the OCAP website, and there was a letter posted by, I believe, Dr. Roland Wong, and he was commenting, it was a letter written to the government, and it was commenting on how the special diet cuts are affecting the lives of his patients. Mm-hmm. Is it possible for you to speak to cases where people's lives are at stake because of the cuts that are taking place?
Yeah, well, the thing about the special diet is that it actually took back some of what had been taken away, so that it meant that people who were accessing it have been able to pay their rent and feed their families with some degree of adequacy and decency. And the impact that's had on people's lives has been enormous. I mean, many things move you, but I remember, I'll never forget this woman calling who broke down crying because her children had tasted fresh strawberries for the first time in their life. And that to her was so significant and so important and worth so much. It actually is worth a great deal nutritionally for a family to be able to have fresh fruit. But to her, it was more than that. It was her dignity. It was just such an important thing. And conversely, as they start to turn the screws and deny people the special diet and prepare to eliminate it outright, the impact that that's having, Amina in Etobicoke, who I spoke about, was talking about the unending numbers of Somali women coming to her home and breaking down and crying in the face of what they're facing, that they can't provide the basic nutrition for their families. They can't meet the needs now, and so that's a disgrace and a shame. But it's also got to be the basis for people fighting back. You know, we keep saying to people that if you want to despair and accept what they're dishing out, you can just close the door and do that all by yourself. But if you want to get organized and if you want to challenge it, you've got to organize with other people. You've got to stand up. You've got to be a part of a community that's fighting back.
And on that note, how can people get involved and get active and join in the fight if you want to share that information with our listeners?
They should just simply give us a call at 416-925-6939 or drop us an email and say that they want to get involved, and then we'll arrange to have people, we'll arrange to have people come in, talk to us, we'll tell people when our membership meetings are, and we'll actually plug people in. And not just that we want them to come to membership meetings, we want them to go back into their communities and tell their family and their friends and neighbours that now's not the time to accept what they're dishing out. We can make a difference, we can win things. People have won in the past, and we've won things ourselves, and we're going to win a lot more. We're not going to let them do this to us,
and we can fight back.
We can that.
So I think that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks Mark for teching, and keep it locked on 88.1 FM. This is your word of mouth news, and you've been listening to OCAP Radio.